Hello and welcome to Understory this 14th day of November 2018. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Last week, Understory introduced the Poison Papers Project. Our interview with Dr. Jonathan Latham is available online. And this week, we meet some local champions protecting our future and environment. They're keenly interested in making sure we all know what environmental dangers are likely to come our way in the form of chemicals and also modified biologies. Some of that interest is in food production. There are two different food production scenarios on offer. One comes from agrochemical big business and the ingenuity applied to maximising return from soil, water and producer. The other scenario arises out of biodynamic and organic growing systems that are concerned about the quality of the food, the sustenance of the environment, as well as an interest in building resilient communities. Consumers of modern cuisine must now choose, but making an informed choice is not as easy as you might expect. The internet is a repository for a wealth of conflicting information about GMOs, particularly. People want accurate, reliable, and truthful information, but not all is what it seems. It's not always easy to know who is behind a seemingly informative website. Just as in the old days, Americans for a Better Breakfast was a front for the pork industry, so today innocent pages offering apparently neutral information may be linked to any source. And as the concentration of company ownership intensifies, along with huge global chemical and seed industry giants, finding independent sources is essential. Understory holds that aim dear. After Professor Jonathan Latham's talk on the Poison Papers and Jeff Powell's presentation that same evening about regenerative agriculture at his Bailing Up property, Understory spoke to some members of the audience. People were drawn to the ideals of the topic of reinventing our food culture in order to regenerate the earth and cultivate healthy communities, especially as it was pointed out, increasing chemical and technology dependencies make for complex decision-making. Here's Janet Grogan from Foodwatch GM Free WA.
Well, I'm Foodwatch, but I've actually been involved in it for 15 years, and the whole idea is to try and keep GM crops out of WA. We've had several changes of government and some good agricultural ministers and some bad. Unfortunately, 10 years ago, when the Liberal Party came in, they did decide to allow GM crops into WA. We have managed to limit it. We have managed to hold the tide back, so we only have one crop, GM canola. And we've also been able to raise awareness because the industry spin that this is perfectly safe and fine and tested, we've been able to show that, in fact, it isn't. We were horrified at the story of Steve Marsh, who did find GM crops on his organic farm, and the court case is historic now. And we have currently a petition that is before the upper house. It's gone to an inquiry stage, and we are calling for farmer protection legislation to make sure that no other farmer has to go through the economic and emotional turmoil that Steve and his wife Sue have gone through.
Can you explain what farmer protection is and why it's needed?
Yes, so what it means is if a farmer is economically impacted by GM crops on their land or in their product or further down the chain, if it's found in food that they've contributed their crop towards, if that is impacted economically, they are able to claim recompense by going to what we would like to see, an independent group. And we would like to see that funded by the GM seed industry. So we've already suggested that $1 per kilo is put onto the price of GM seeds, which is already high anyway, and that is banked so that any farmer, and we know there have been occasions of farmers that have been economically affected, but of course with the story of Steve now, everyone's too frightened to come forward. So we want to have that fail-safe put into place.
And do you have conversations with the GM industry? Are they amenable to conversations, or has it been too many miles that you tend not to have a chat anymore?
We just don't, because they're not willing to discuss. Unfortunately, we have attempted to. And so the best thing is to try and do what we can. We know what they're doing. We call them out when we can. But I think the best thing is, as far as we're concerned, is to educate people about what is happening and try and show them how they can circumnavigate this problem.
The current inquiry into mechanisms for compensation for economic loss to farmers in Western Australia caused by a contamination by genetically modified material was triggered by a petition tabled by Greens MLC Diane Evers last year.
What excited you about today's presentations?
More people and interested people. Jeff Powell's presentation was very positive, showing people that there is another way that it can work and people can work in this manner and change the way we do agriculture. And the people that were here, the crowd, were asking very good questions. They were interested. They want more nutritious food. And I think some of those people may have the ability to influence how we manage agriculture, you know, to actually talk to their friends, their family, and spread the word that farmers need our support to change how they do it.
As you go around the Southwest, are you seeing any signs of change?
It's the Southwest and the agriculture regions. I'm talking to farmers when I go to events such as this that are trying new methods. They are trying to do things that challenge the traditional methods. And the difficulty they're up against, though, are the banks, the agrochemical companies, our own Department of Agriculture, who rely on the traditional things that have been done to continue things as they are. And they're very resistant to change, not the farmers, but this agro-industry, including their Farmers Federation, PGA, things like that, are very resistant because, as it is, it's supporting the power that is there now. And change, they will see that diminish. So there's farmers out there who are trying new things, but they're not getting any support from anywhere, and they feel like the odd one out, even though there's a good number of them making those changes.
One of the things that surprised me, we talk about traditional farming, but in fact we're talking about modern farming methods, right down to the fact that farmers can't even buy chicks that are non-patented at the moment.
Yeah, it's very difficult, as we heard Jeff Powell going through it, to try to find a breed that he could raise. There's so much money changing hands in the agricultural industry that a lot of things are tied up. And even to try to go away from using chemicals is very hard to do because everybody that supports you is saying this is what you need, either the nutrients or these herbicides and things. It's very hard to change from that. So what we need to do is farmers work together collectively, maybe with an organization, in this case probably RegenWA, because the current farming organizations are reluctant to change or even being pressured not to change.
Diane Evers, is there something that the consumer can do to help make a difference?
What would be nice is if consumers actually put the money where the mouth is and actually buy the organic or biodynamic or spray-free or even reduced spray. Just trying to buy foods that's more healthy, buy it less processed, less packaged, and go for the whole foods where they know the farmer, they know where it's from, and buy it local too. It's important to everybody to get involved, be active in whatever way you can, take notice, become aware, and depending on your situation, act in your own whatever works for you best. So if that means contacting your politicians, great that. If it's out standing on the street corners and holding a sign up at the next rally, do that. If it's just going into your supermarket and saying, please stock, you know, organic tomatoes, do that. There's so many steps people can take. Whichever one works for you, just get doing it and encourage others to. I've been a gardener for about 8 years or so. Some good years are good. It's not a natural thing to me. The tomatoes that you buy commercially grown are picked when they're green and they're ripened with, you know, chemical processing, or just it's a long time from when they were picked. And when you get that tomato or whatever the fruit is, like the orange as it falls off the tree, that's the time that it's perfect for eating, because in the natural state of things, that's how it developed. So, yeah, if you can get your own garden going or join a community garden or support a local farmer's market, that's where you're going to get the good nutrition.
That was Diane Evers, Greens MLC, representing the Southwest and the state government's upper house, at the recent local event to hear from Dr. Jonathan Latham and food-producing social entrepreneur Jeff Powell, both of whose interviews with Understory are available online. Understory asked Alex Jones of Pesticide Action Group WA what brought her to the talk.
Well, I've been campaigning against the use of pesticides in the urban environment now for many years, and I was very pleased to hear that Jonathan Latham was coming over to speak in Perth. I just felt that the more people came to hear him, the better, because finding out about the Poison Papers project, I realised how similar our situation is here in certainly in Western Australia. We have a systemic problem. We have felt for a long time that that there has been certainly collusion to keep to the status quo. We have an entrenched culture of using pesticides, well, not only in agriculture, but certainly in the urban area. And people have been complaining for a very long time, but there's no central system for gathering that information and level of dissatisfaction in the community. Typically, people will just, you know, speak to a contractor or ring the council, and they're told that the product is safe because it's been registered for use, that the practice is lawful, and, you know, most people just go away. But in our case, we've been doing everything imaginable under the sun, writing, providing scientific information, report upon report, evidence of harm or the risk of harm, this sort of thing. It's fallen on deaf ears.
And who do you send that to? Who's responsible in the Western Australian realm for that sort of thing, or is it a national?
Well, it's a systemic problem. That's why we're calling for a Royal Commission. So at the federal level, we have trade deals that promote the importation of pesticides. So we import from a number of countries, including China, India, and also now Indonesia.
So you've mentioned asking for a Royal Commission. What would be the parameters of that? What's the request?
Well, certainly it would have to be an independent and transparent Royal Commission. I'm aware that there was a Royal Commission in 1984. I think the title of that was Chemical Agents Used in the Vietnam War and the Effects on Australian War Veterans. What I've found out about that was that it was not independent of industry pressure and the submission by industry. We don't want that kind of Royal Commission. We want a Royal Commission which accepts us as stakeholders, ordinary people in urban areas, people who have been affected. The evidence is there, but so far nobody's listening. Our children were little. It was October, beautiful weather. Everything was looking green. And then after a while, I noticed the lawn had died. We had big yellow rings along the back fence. We had passion fruit vines along the back fence, and they died. And I realised that the lane had been sprayed. I didn't ask what was used at that stage, but I did contact the council and found out that they had sprayed. And I was very angry, and I told them never to spray around our property and our children again. And I went into the shed. I found some red paint, and I put the number of the house on the back fence, and in big letters, no spraying. So that's where it started, but it wasn't until really quite a few years later that I became active in doing something about it, because it was just getting worse and worse. It's something we all have to, you know, think about and do something about.
Jane Bremer is from the Alliance for Clean Environment, as well as the National Toxics Network and Zero Waste WA.
For me, I look through the fossil fuel lens at all of these issues. When we consider that a very large arm of the fossil fuel industry is the petrochemical industry, and the petrochemical industry makes our modern lifestyles with pesticides, plastics, industrial chemicals, food chemicals, you know, every part of our lives. So what we're seeing is undue influence and reach into our lives from this particular sector of the fossil fuel industry. And so at the moment, we're really focusing our campaign on the impacts of pesticide usage in our urban environment, and particularly the use of pesticides in places where children frequent. So in our schools, in our playgrounds, in our parks. We've just seen this massive, huge legal case in the US where Dwayne Johnson, a former grounds gardener at a school, got nearly $400 million US dollars in compensation for the cancer that he obtained through the use of Monsanto's glyphosate pesticide, which he was exposed to often. So it was a huge, huge win that the court case in the US recognised that this product, glyphosate, had caused his cancer. They looked at all the scientific evidence. They upheld the World Health Organization's classification of glyphosate as a probable carcinogen, a decision made on more than 800 peer-reviewed science reports. It's a massive, massive legal case with 4,000 litigants behind Dwayne Johnson waiting to also sue, and more evidence to come out about Monsanto's crimes in covering up the dangers of their pesticide and the lengths that they went to influence regulators and governments to hide the real impacts of their most widely used pesticide, which has sold on the fact that it's the safest in the world. And yet we're spraying this routinely in our kids' playgrounds, in their parks, in their schoolyards.
World Health Organization and the European Union, they've both warned about glyphosate, but local councils are still spraying around the streets, aren't they?
Yes, and look, we shoot the responsibility for this directly home to the APVMA, the Australian Pesticides Veterinary Medicines Authority. They're our federal regulator of pesticides. The role of the APVMA is to make sure that industry has adequate labelling of their products. When we look at products like glyphosate, we look at the label instructions, because essentially the label is the law. You have to abide by what the label instruction says in terms of health and safety in the application of that pesticide. So when we look at these pesticides like glyphosate and many of the other ones that are used in our urban environment, it's very clear they were never written for use in the urban environment. They're clearly written for use in the agricultural environment. So we can spray those same chemicals on a children's playground and park, and within minutes children can access that turf. Whereas when these pesticides are used in the agricultural environment, there's re-entry periods, sometimes up for 2 weeks. No one can enter that field without full PPE. And there's a horrific list of terrifying chemicals that can be used in our urban environment, chemicals that are banned overseas, that our agricultural department have given special permits to use. So when we consider the potential exposure to pesticides in the urban environment is increasing in volume and use and toxicity, we really need the APVMA to rewrite these labels so that they're adequate for use in the urban environment.
Are there alternatives?
Well, yes, and there are much safer alternatives for weed control in the urban environment. Steam weeding works just as well. It's been proven over and over again. It works just as well as any pesticide, and it leaves no toxic residue or harm or spray drift to anyone. It doesn't have the same health and environmental impacts. For goodness sakes, the EMRC, the East Metro Regional Council, has trialled steam, purchased their own equipment and leases it out to local governments. There really is no excuse. Local governments can save money and our health and our environment by choosing safer alternatives. There are a range of alternatives. The East Metropolitan Regional Council has written a report about these alternatives that local governments can use. So the information is there, the products are there, the contracts are there. I would be asking the local government minister when he's going to pass a policy that protects environmental health in our urban environment from pesticides and directs local governments to use safer alternatives. I'd be asking our health minister when he's going to demand that the APVMA write labels that are applicable for use in the urban environment, and our federal politicians need to take that right to the APVMA as well.
Thanks so much to interviewees Jane Bremer, Southwest Greens MLC Diane Evers, Janet Grogan and Alex Jones, and to understory reporter Adrian Glamorgan. Background and ongoing information about these topics is online at sites like Independent Science News, which Dr. Jonathan Latham contributes to, as well as Friends of the Earth and, of course, the organisations that our interviewees represent. Websites like the Poison Papers are also important to source if you need to go behind the scenes. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to share this and other programs from Understory's wide range on our precious environment. You'll find them online at RTRFM or Google Understory blog. And we'll be back next week, same time, same station, same planet, as there's always more to explore on Understory.